Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End. I'm Adam Leventhal, The Athletic's Watford correspondent, back for our regular Thursday edition. Now, on the agenda this week, we're going to be looking back at the defeat against Southampton, ahead to the trip to the Emirates to face Arsenal, discussing some tactical trends that have developed and obviously still need working on under Claudio Ranieri. We'll be talking about recruitment, club communication. We'll be answering your questions as well. So thank you very much for sending them in via the Athletic app and also on Twitter. Now, you may remember last week I told you about an incident at Goodison Park and a supporter asked whether a local reporter could spell a certain word. I'm not going to use that word again because John, who obviously you all know very, very well and who edits the podcast, he bleeped it out on the last edition, so I'm not even going to say it. Not even going to say it. But after Southampton, I was the local reporter at Vicarage Road, and a fan came up to me and said, "I'm sure you know how to spell that word." And I just thought, well, yeah, sort of agree. It wasn't great. But as a starter for my co-hosts this week, Dave and Mike, great to have you on board once again. You're alongside me. Dave, I'll start with you. What word would you use to describe the performance against Southampton and why?
I don't know how you spell this word. It's more of a sound, to be honest with you. But it would be, go on,
Frustration, that sounds like to me, Dave. Frustration. Yeah.
That's pretty much bang on. Mike, what about you?
Well, can I just start? Can we talk? I went to Vicarage Road twice at the weekend. I don't know if that makes me a glutton for punishment. And I just wanted to say a big well done to Watford women. A spirited comeback on Sunday against Crystal Palace. They went 2-0 down. And I did think, oh, crikey, this could be a case of here we go again. They have struggled at the start of the season. And it was a real, real joy to see a team in yellow at Vicarage Road really fight and work hard to get that deserved comeback. So well done to Helen Ward and her charges at Watford Women. They were brilliant on Sunday. As for Saturday, the word I'm going to use to describe that performance is, I'm just going to go with familiar, unfortunately. I think the home form has been nothing short of tragic, really. I was just speaking to my long-suffering brother, he's my brother, really, you have to put up with me. But he said he missed Villa at home and he's seen one goal all season. He hasn't managed to get to any of the away games. So, yeah, it was just the same old story at home, wasn't it? So, yeah, familiar for me, sadly.
It was disappointing because, and Dave, you know, the last time that you were on this edition of the podcast, you were talking about momentum, needing to get some momentum, and we got that win against Everton, and then yeah, it just fell a little bit flat. But we did warn on this edition last week that Southampton, and Claudio Ranieri said it as well, they're an intelligent team and they've delivered some particularly good performances, and it shouldn't really have been a surprise that they played better than us. And unfortunately, we just couldn't compete with them. Now, I wanted to reflect on one of the pieces that I've done this week, which dropped on Monday after the defeat against Southampton. And it focused on probably one of the main burning issues that a lot of fans listening will have. Are Watford's defensive options currently able to improve enough to keep Watford up, or is strengthening the only option? And also a caveat to that, should it have been done a long time ago? Now, I asked that question to Claudio Ranieri after the game in the news conference. And I think, you know, to cut his answer short, basically the jury is out, and he has said that he still needs to see whether Nicholas Nkulu, who came in on a free, Francisco Serralta, who's been out injured, and Christian Cabasele, who's also been out injured, what they can do and whether they can actually take the levels up. And as I understand it, that is pretty much what the club hierarchy are thinking as well. Let's wait. We obviously can't. I mean, we could add one more player. There is still a player free in the squad before January. But let's wait and see. And then they are considering, due to, you know, the Africa Cup of Nations also on the horizon, and William Troost-Ekong heading away, Adam Messina heading away as well, that they might actually do some strengthening in January. But I wanted to put that question to both of you as well, because you'll have differing views, I'm sure. You know, do you think that this offering, and that counts for all of them, whether they start, you know, playing or not, the likes of Nkulu and Serralta, etc., mixed with Cathcart and William Troost-Ekong. Mike, from your point of view, is this crop of defenders good enough to keep Watford in the Premier League?
On the face of it, you've got to say no. No clean sheets in the Premier League this season. Not only that, we haven't looked like getting close to getting a clean sheet. We've conceded goals almost at will. And when we, even in the games where we've conceded one, I'm looking at Southampton, Leeds, Newcastle, they could have had five each. So we could have easily conceded sort of anywhere between 12 and 15 goals in those. Perhaps I'm over exaggerating, but you get the picture. The stats and the performances probably speak for themselves. That said, the game on Saturday was an interesting one, because I think the Southampton goal ultimately came from a defensive mistake, a bit of a lapse in concentration. I think had they got out to that ball quicker and cleared it, then Che Adams doesn't get the chance. Yes, it was a good goal. He doesn't get the chance to drag it back and to put, pop it into the top corner. So had they dealt with that, you could argue they could have snuck a point. And if they do that more often than not, then they're going to be in the shake-up at the end of the season. So the bottom line is, it's very, very hard as me, as a supporter, first and foremost, to say that I'm anything other than worried about the defensive options we have.
Go on, Dave. You kick on from this. Are you in the camp of, look, we shouldn't even be having this conversation now because we all knew this was going to happen because our defenders haven't been good enough for, well, you can go back to 2019. 20 is a really good example, but they haven't invested enough. All these accusations that we've heard a lot of, are you on that side of things, or do you believe that these players can actually improve and get better under a new manager?
Both things can be true.
Yeah.
Claudio Ranieri may not have seen much or enough yet of all of those players. With the exception of Nicholas Nkulu, we've all seen enough of those players to know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And without being unkind to any of them, most of them probably aren't good enough to be a consistently, well, high-performing Premier League defence. I always look at the sort of test of how many other teams in the league would take those players. I don't think there are many teams in the league that would take our centre-backs. Maybe Serralta would be the one that would get into a couple of teams around us. Newcastle, you know, probably being the one who've, you know, got probably a worse defence than us, really, if you look at the abilities levels on show. But apart from that, not many at all. Quite a few of them, their best days probably behind them as well, with the exception of Serralta in terms of the central guys. Fullbacks, again, Kiko not going to get any better. Messina not going to get any better. Danny Rose improving, but he's sort of not going to get exponentially better. He's kind of coming back to where he should be. And Ngakia is a young, promising prospect. Hopefully will continue to improve. But as a whole, no, I don't think so. Yes, we would have liked to seen them strengthen in the summer. As you pointed out in your piece the other day, we did actually have a very, very good defensive record last season in the Championship. It was a division lower. We were that much better than most of the teams. Fine, but you can maybe see why that might have given the board a sense of confidence that these guys as a unit could actually do okay for us. But I do think we need to prioritise strengthening that defensive department in January, especially as you've mentioned, because two of those players who have played quite a lot of the games already in Messina and Troost-Ekong are not going to be around for a couple of weeks, it seems. But it's also hard to get the right sort of players that you want in January. We know that. We talked about that at length every year. You know that. You've covered loads of transfer windows. You know how difficult it is to get players in January, especially the ones that you want. So it's not a great situation. But the one thing I would say in you know, perhaps in more positive outlook, it's not just about those defenders in terms of their individual ability. You have to defend as a team. You have to get all parts of the team working in cohesion. You have to defend from the front, which is, as we'll go on to later in terms of looking at stats, we're trying to do a bit more of at the moment. The midfield has to protect the defence better. I know Colin spoke about that at length on Monday's pod. So they may not be the best individual players in the world, but with a good coach and, you know, well-drilled, repetitive training and practice, they can hopefully improve as a unit to maybe give us a bit more of a chance.
They can be better and they need to be better, I think, is the bottom line.
Mm. I think that's bang on. And we've seen on, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit earlier on, Mike, that situation against Southampton. I was actually going to put it in the piece about defenders and defensive records. If you look at the way that Southampton have actually, you know, they've not set the world alight this season in the Premier League. That was only their second win of the season. But they've managed to pick up draws, 0-0 draws. They've managed to win their games 1-0 because they've been able to keep clean sheets. And if we know that we're still trying to get better up top and we're not necessarily fully flying, and Joshua King's still trying to sort of find his consistency once again, mm, we need to be able to keep clean sheets if we're going to sneak a win here or there.
I was toying with the thought of putting Ben Foster in my Fantasy Premier League team on Saturday because I was thinking I have Aaron Ramsdale's the other goalkeeper in my team and he was playing away at Leicester and I thought we're at home against Southampton. We've not got a clean sheet yet. Surely we're going to get one soon, aren't we? Surely this is the day it happens. Thankfully, I decided not to do that at the last minute. Mm. I went with Ramsdale. Arsenal kept a clean sheet and lo and behold, we didn't. And I think it was kind of asked in Ranieri's first press conference about the whole, you did the whole clean sheet pizza reward thing at Leicester, you're going to do the same here? Well, yeah, and he sort of laughed it off. But it actually is the issue now, isn't it? Where the hell are we? And we're not going to keep a clean sheet anytime soon with those fixtures coming up, you wouldn't think. But it surely has to be a big motivation. Like that, to me, going into that game on Saturday, that would have been my focus. I would have said to those players, I'll almost take a 0-0. I want you to not concede a goal.
I think that what they need to focus on is stop giving up big chances, because there are far too many big chances in the games that we're playing at the moment. I mean, it's not over-egging it to say that Southampton should have been 2-0 up, certainly, and probably should have been 3-0 up at half time.
Well, Hasenhüttl said the same thing. He was asked after the game, was that Southampton's best performance of the season so far? And he said, well, no, not really, because we should have been 4-0 up at half time and we weren't. And he was annoyed. Said, yeah. He was a disappointment.
They have to stop giving up those big chances. And I think that can be done with your approach, with the tactical approach, and with the hard work. I mean, that's not to say it's the best answer, because it would be better to have a better, stronger defensive unit that provides us with a solid base from which to push on down the field. But that's obviously not the case. It's obviously not going to change dramatically enough in January for us to change our whole outlook on how Watford perform as a side. Ranieri has pretty much got what he's got. But as Dave alludes to there, what they absolutely have to do is just stop giving up those big chances, because better teams, and we face five of them in a row now, will be ruthless, absolutely ruthless. And the psychological damage of not just, you know, let's forget keeping clean sheets. We need to keep it single figures, even potentially against teams like Manchester City and Chelsea. You laugh, but Southampton could have been 4-0 up without, and as Hasenhüttl rightly said, they didn't look particularly good, did they? They weren't exactly dynamic and slicing through us. They were just able to forge out really, really big opportunities time and time again. And Watford have to be set up to prevent that from happening. Yeah. And they need to work out how they get the best out of the defenders and the other players in front of them, because they can't get off scot-free either, as to how they organise themselves as a unit, as an 11, to stop giving up those chances.
It's going to be 7-week Halloween period for us, really, isn't it?
Oh, bring it on. Come on.
It's going to keep on going. Just to point out, that laugh was sort of a nervous, manic laugh, thinking about the teams that we're going to face. But there was, just to sort of wrap up on this discussion and, you know, following up from that piece, there was some depending on the way you look at it, some good news, which I found out in terms of an understanding that Francisco Sierralta, who was due to be out of contract at the end of this season, has signed effectively a new 5-year contract. And so I suppose that shows that they are, you know, trying to evolve and, you know, pin their hopes on someone that they have seen potential in and someone that maybe they can build alongside. So we will see how it develops. And I think there is definitely work to be done. And also you have to take into consideration that the tinkers that Claudio Ranieri made in the game, I don't necessarily think, I could see his thinking. I could see that he wanted to be a little bit more aggressive up top. And maybe João Pedro, who our condolences go out today, of course, after the loss of his stepfather, he's had a very challenging life all the way through. But this is such a cruel blow because I know how close he was to Carlos Jr., who was his stepfather, and he sadly lost his life. So our condolences go out to him. You know, João Pedro was brought into the side, and I could see why he did it. But I don't know. My personal opinion would have been like, let's, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that means starting with the same starting 11 and keeping your options, the same options on the bench. But I could see that he wanted to start as he'd ended so successfully, but he didn't have Emmanuel Dennis. So let's see what happens against Arsenal. And just a reminder, if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/rookery, and you can read that piece. And we'll be going on to another piece, which you can dig into as well very, very shortly. And you get a discount by listening to From the Rookery End.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
So the piece that dropped on The Athletic today, on Thursday, is entitled How Ranieri is Trying to Change Watford's Playing Style. And I worked alongside The Athletic's data analyst, Mark Carey, on this one. I do hope you've managed to sort of dig into the piece this morning. If you haven't, I'd point you in the direction to have a full read of it. But I thought it'd be nice to just sort of pull out a couple of things from the piece which you may find interesting. And basically what Ranieri seemingly is trying to do is turn Watford into a more direct, higher pressing, not high pressing, but higher up, risk averse, and obviously trying to make them more creative. And a few things that maybe stick out, because it's sort of broken into what they're doing in possession and out of possession. And gents, as well, I'll ask you about what your thoughts are in terms of what you've seen and what you think, and if it tallies with your views in a moment's time. But in terms of trying to be more high pressing, we are seeing, you know, more energy. In that context, it is actually difficult to weigh up whether we're actually doing really well or we're just a little bit better than we were, which isn't actually that great. Because, you know, traditionally, when Watford have been in the Premier League, we've actually been a decent high-pressing side. But the 2019-20 season, and there's a chart that's included within the piece, it just shows how up and down and inconsistent we have been. When, you know, Javi Gracia was initially in charge, we started off really high-pressing and then it just went down. Then there was a passive period under Quique Sanchez Flores. It then went up under Nigel Pearson. It then dropped like a lead balloon during lockdown. And I think all the intensity for a lot of the teams did that. Then when Sisco comes in, it's all high energy, high energy, high energy. And then we get back into the Premier League and he actually goes against probably his own instincts because he wants Watford to be more pragmatic and maybe sit back a little bit. So it's difficult now for Claudio Ranieri to come in and make Watford into a really sort of energetic, high-pressing team because they haven't prepared necessarily for this season to do that. So it's going to take a little bit of time. And one of the lines from Ranieri in the piece, and he said it in the post-match news conference against Southampton, he said, you know, football is not an exact science. And it is very, very difficult that on, you know, in terms of data and metrics and things like that, you can make improvements. But sometimes you're just up against other teams that are more settled. And he mentioned about, you know, Ralf Hasenhüttl having 3 years with his team to drill his team in exactly the way that he wants them to play. And I think there's going to be bumps in the road under Claudio Ranieri. So, I mean, that's a pressing side of things. There's other things that are mentioned in terms of when Watford are in possession. They're basically booting the ball longer. Get the ball away from our own goal. It's a lot easier to deal with it if it's further away. They're making more progressive passes. They're crossing the ball more. They're having more shots. They're just trying to refine all of these things. And it is very much a work in progress. Dave, from your point of view, I mean, what things have maybe stuck out from what you've seen and maybe a couple of things that you saw in the piece as well?
Well, it is always interesting to try and align what you see and things that you take away from games with your eyes and compare them to what the data tells you. And not quite often those two things don't always match up. But it's encouraging, I think, to hear that basically most of the metrics that you looked at in the piece, we're making steps in the right direction. Having good underlying numbers is a good thing. It's something perhaps you can cling to in times of when results aren't going your way. But if the numbers are beneath, the performances are good, it should hopefully turn in your favour eventually. It's a small sample size. It's only 3 matches. First one was against Liverpool, which would definitely skew the numbers even, you know, more out of our favour. But the 2 games against Everton and Southampton, I think there was plenty to be encouraged about. And we have discussed the frustrations and the disappointments of the Southampton game in the previous podcast, so we'll leave that. But there was, certainly from what I saw, there was plenty of effort. There was plenty of attempted forward momentum and attempted progressive passes. There was, you know, Saar had a bad day. I'd rather he was in those positions than not. He was still showing for the ball and trying to cross it. Yes, the crosses didn't go where anyone wanted them to go, but he was still there. He was still in the right areas. He was still in the final third. He still nearly scored a goal on a bad day for him. So I think there was plenty of things there for us to be positive about.
I take what Dave's saying 100%, but I think they're far too fleeting at the moment. I think they are the very greenest of green shoots. You pointed out in your piece, Adam, about Ben Foster's distribution, which I thought on a couple of times on Saturday was excellent, finding the space on either flank and setting up an attack. Not rocket science, really simple, nicely executed, and we're off to the races.
The point of the piece is the fact that through looking at a couple of things, and that's pressing, that's progressive passes, and that's passes in, you know, the number of passes in our final third, in our own defensive third. All of those things have gone in the right direction. The going long, you can argue about whether that's a good approach or not. Some people like to play out from the back, some people don't. But the pressing, and progressive passing and the pressing, both things we're doing better at, which, forget the results, that shows you what Ranieri is trying to do. He wants us to do this a certain way. And by his own admission, it will take time for us to hone that and to get better at it and to get used to it and to get used to his methods. So, in a way, I'm almost looking at these next 5 games as training sessions, stupid as that sounds. Obviously, I want to get points from them. We might get a point. We might even get a win in one of them. Who knows? But if you accept the prospect, the reality that we are unlikely to get many points against teams of that calibre, but and that's almost freeing in a way. Ranieri can say to his team, look, you're going to come up against some of the best teams, but I don't care. I don't care whether you're playing Manchester City or Southampton. I want you to concentrate on doing these things. Play like this against whoever you're playing against, and eventually we'll get better at it. And we might come through these next five games with not many points, but then after that, we'll be ready. We'll be a much better well-oiled machine. We'll be much better organised. We'll be ready to go. The question is, even if they do that, it's about, can they maintain their strong mentality if they do lose five games in a row? It's kind of, they might be working on a lot of things, but they'll still be thinking, looking around going, Christ, we just can't win a game. So it's a really difficult balancing act coming up for Ranieri. He's got to be realistic. He's got to make sure that the heads don't drop, and he's got to really make sure that they're focused.
The players, we've talked a lot about Ranieri. I think the players do have to take responsibility as well for trying to implement what he wants them to do. I think more shots, I mean, it sounds pretty basic, but we have seen that as well. And I think having the confidence to take on the shots, Kutsu in particular isn't shy of having a dig from just outside the edge of the box, and he seems to be getting closer. And I think that's an indication, perhaps, that they're not running too low on confidence as it stands. But they do have to. They have to keep that going. They just have to keep trying to implement what he's suggesting. And Dave, it's impossible to steer clear of. It's impossible to avoid the thought of these next five games. And if we do lose all five of them, that's 8 out of 9 we will have lost. And the psychological impact that potentially might have is huge. So they just have to keep on doing what they're doing and believing. And I think Ranieri should be able to instill that in them. When we talked about him as a head coach, his experience and him being around the block, whether it's in this country, whether it's in Italy or wherever, this is where you earn your corn in these really difficult times.
The thing we've got to remember as well, right? Since before the start of the season, we've been looking at this spell. We were fearing it. We were saying we need to get X amount of points in the early part of the season because we've got this run coming up in October and November and into December. We've been petrified since that time. And I think we're building it up and building it up and building it up in our heads. And I hope the players aren't doing the same, because look around the league. Yes, Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool, as we've seen, are the best teams in this league by a distance. Yes, Arsenal are in good form. Leicester, a bit up and down, but obviously still got lots of good players, can beat most teams on their day. But also, these teams do have times where they lose. Manchester City lost to Crystal Palace last week. Chelsea have drawn. They've dropped points this season. They've had some draws. Liverpool have drawn this season. You know, Manchester United are not in good shape at the moment for a number of reasons. We shouldn't just write these games off. Like, we have beaten top teams in the past in the Premier League. The only one we haven't beaten of those top teams is Manchester City. They're the still one that eludes us and may well still do after this season. But all those other teams in the top six, and Leicester and all those teams like them, we've beaten them. We've beaten them all. So we have to have some confidence and belief that we can get points from this spell.
The piece that I wrote is all about the data, but these five games are about things that you're going to have to rely on in adversity. You know, just a bit of steel, a bit of determination, a bit of trying to galvanize yourselves, a bit of siege mentality, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, sometimes in adversity you can become stronger. In the past, when we've been in these sort of runs, we have had fragile confidence and that's been shattered, and we've just been left like, you know, broken glass on the floor, and it's been very, very difficult to pick us up again. I'm thinking back to, you know, 2019-20. But maybe this season, like you said, Dave, if Ranieri can, you know, keep drilling into them, right, let's just stick to our principles, whatever they may be. Let's try and stay in games, and just maybe we might be able to eke something out. You know, get a shock early goal and then build from that. So maybe we might just get a shock result. And we have got shock results. And John mentioned it on the last Thursday edition of the podcast, that game where we went to the Emirates on deadline day. No one was expecting that we would win. And we got a 2-1 victory. We did it in the cup as well. However, this time around, Arsenal, it seems like their soft underbelly has disappeared and they've actually got a bit of a football team. Here's The Athletic's Arsenal correspondent, Art de Roche, just to take us into the mood at the Emirates at the moment.
Arsenal haven't lost since August, when they fell to a 5-0 defeat against Manchester City. So since then, picking up results in September was when fans started to feel okay, but they were still looking for those performances to come through. And I think since coming back from the October international break with very convincing wins against Aston Villa and Leicester City, there has been a sway towards happiness, I guess is the word you'd say, with the current squad. I think there is still some convincing for Mikel Arteta to do just because of the performance over the board last season and the season before. And there's always going to be a certain distrust of the board. But overall, the feelings towards Arsenal as a whole have improved over the past couple of months, and they're just looking for more consistency in the Premier League. And with one game a week, no Europe, they hope that will come. I think we've seen that aside from like overall performances with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the way he's been pressing in games has been quite impressive. They would hope that continues against Watford, kind of harass them from the start. And in terms of what you're likely to see, in terms of a setup, Arteta's gone with almost a 4-4-2, or I guess we'd call it a 4-4-1-1 in the past couple of games when Alex Lacazette's come back into the team. Lacazette will play just off Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang when Arsenal are in possession. Emile Smith-Rowe off the left, Bukayo Saka off the right, with Sambi Lokonga partnering Thomas Partey in midfield. And that's given Arsenal a lot more license to break quickly, especially with Emile Smith-Rowe off the left. And then without the ball, they tend to keep that shape. And then Aubameyang is the one who would lead the press, his triggers mostly being when the ball was passed to a certain centre-back, or if it's passed back to the goalkeeper. That is his, almost his green light, if you'd like to call it. And I think going into this game, there is probably a lot more positive momentum in terms of their mental approach. And being at the Emirates, they will, I think, have a lot of support from the fans that are there. They had that against Aston Villa, and that drove them a lot against Villa. So I think this is probably not a great time to face Arsenal if you're an opposition team. They would be going into that game feeling like they should continue their run of good results.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Part of The Athletic Podcast Network, this is From the Rookery End.
Now, we're going to be coming to your questions in a moment's time, but just before that, we wanted to talk about club communications. And that the reason for that is because in the piece that I did talking about the defence and the potential of signing players in January and Francisco Serralta's new contract and all that sort of stuff, I included some quotes from the chairman and chief executive, Scott Duxbury, where he was talking about, you know, continuing to want to make bold decisions and, you know, that they believe are in the best interest of the long-term future of the club and all that sort of stuff.
And a lot of people sort of got stuck into those quotes and were, you know, critical about the way that Scott Duxbury had communicated and things like that. And I thought, hang on a minute, hold on a minute. I understand people can be critical, but one of the accusations was the hierarchy need to communicate better. And these quotes were actually published in the match day program, and I understand a lot of people don't buy a match day program anymore and things like that, but this is a brand new thing that the club are doing to try and get their message across better, to communicate better, to have a sort of more of a link between the hierarchy and the fans. And as it says in the program, that sometimes these will be published online and things like that. And I saw that Cristiano Giretta is going to be appearing on the new Hive Live program, the midweek one, and stuff like that. So clearly they are conscious of the fact that they want to communicate better. Now, I just found it quite entertaining that, you know, a lot of people have been very critical of the club, and we'd spoken about it on the podcast before about them needing to communicate better and all that sort of stuff. But then when they do communicate and they do tell you what they think, they also get criticism. So they're sort of in a no-win situation. I mean, Mike, from your point of view, you can understand people not liking what people say, but they can't be critical for them, you know, trying to do things better, can they?
I think they're on a bit of a hiding to nothing, to be honest. I mean, there can be no denying that they've got some things wrong. I mean, an obvious example is the AD Mariappa departure, for example. That was a communications catastrophe, really. And I remember speaking out, saying, oh, come on, you don't think Watford aren't going to mark Adrian Mariappa's departure? They'll just have something planned. And of course they didn't. They came clean. They had dropped the ball. So mistakes are made, and I think they'd be the first to admit that. I think you mentioned the new Hive Live show on a Thursday. That's something that's interesting and should be entertaining for supporters. That's a clear attempt to keep the information and the interest and the entertainment flowing in between match days. The piece in the programme column is a very, very clear response to requests from a lot of people to hear from the hierarchy. But all that said, I do think they're on a bit of a hiding to nothing. Dave, you're very vocal about wanting to hear from Gino. Mm-hmm. I happen to believe that we wouldn't learn anything new if we did hear from Gino. He would say, I'm invested in Watford. I've continued to invest in Watford. I want the best for Watford. Everything I do will be to try and move Watford forward. That is what any chairman, what any senior manager is going to say in the public domain.
Yeah.
That's basically the size of it.
And depends who's asking the questions, though.
It does. Of course it does. But even the most skilled journalist, interviewer, interrogator is going to come up against somebody.
I think we should let him have 10 minutes with Arlo.
I wouldn't let Gino do that. I have too much respect for the man to put him through that. But I think it is difficult. I think the problem we have is that supporters quite rightly have very, very firm beliefs, opinions and desires for the way they want Watford to go. And I think sometimes when they don't see that happening, there is it almost like they take it as a personal criticism. Why isn't this happening? Why aren't the hierarchy doing that? And why aren't they telling me why they aren't doing it? And I get that. You know, I'm critical when I think the club deserve it, and or when the team deserve it. Over the 10, 11 years we've been doing the podcast, I call them out time and time again. But I think on a communication front, it's very difficult. People have to sort of sit and think, what am I actually asking? Mm. What are the questions I want answered? And what is the reality of any answer that is going to be put in the public domain? I'd also make the point that Watford are a very open organisation when it comes to getting in touch. So if you have got a burning question for anyone at the club, perhaps ask it. Drop them a line, stick a letter in the post and see what happens.
Go old school. That's basically what you're saying. Because that's, you know, you look back at those wonderful sort of, not well, they sort of like rose-tinted, but gloriously rose-tinted days of, you know, Graham Taylor responding to letters to young kids and things like that. Give it a go. Give it a go. Yeah. Send an email, maybe an electronic mail nowadays, you know, rather than a written letter. But, you know, I think that it's well worth doing. But one thing I just wanted to bring up, because a lot of people have sort of taken exception to it, but I think it's an interesting debating point. just from these Scott Duxbury column, he says, regarding some of the choices that they've made, sometimes they can seem unpopular at face value, though we believe the vast majority of our supporters, the silent majority, as I've heard them described before, understand the steps that we take to always have Watford Football Club at heart. And I suppose, you know, the use of that word, the silent majority, is an interesting one, because it's going to antagonise those people that talk a lot, basically. And everyone is entitled to their opinion, and everyone is entitled to vent their frustrations. But I suppose it's how you view it. Do you think, and I ask this to both of you, do you think the majority of fans are happier with Gino Pozzo in charge than not?
I think yes. I think people are happier, despite our regular frustrations at anything that goes wrong at the pitch or off the pitch with the club. I think we can all remember the bad times. We can all remember the guy who was here before and some of the guys who were here before that. This is by no means the worst ownership Watford have ever had. Doesn't mean we shouldn't put our hands up and raise our concerns and be sceptical and ask questions when we think they need to be asked. I agree with Mike. To a certain extent, football clubs are on a hiding to nothing. They can never satisfy the fans. And sometimes even if you, the more you give them, the more they want to be fed. Yeah. So it's difficult. You know, you look at the mess that Spurs got themselves in the summer when Daniel Levy came out in an open letter to the fans saying, I want to find someone who's going to play exciting, attacking football, the Tottenham DNA. What happens? He tries to get six managers. They all turn him down. He has to get Nuno. And look what's happened since. You know, he's made to look silly. And that is a trap that any of these guys can fall into if they speak too much sometimes. So there is value in sometimes keeping your cards close to your chest, keeping your powder dry and picking your moments when you talk. One simple thing that I would like to see return now that we're, you know, in an increasingly not post-pandemic, it's still going on, but we're moving in the right direction, hopefully, in general terms from the pandemic, is can we have the return of the at your place or the at our place events? I think there was value in those. I know sometimes they're probably sick of answering the same old questions, just like you are, Adwin. You get asked the same questions every week when you ask for questions. But I think there was value in the gesture of doing those events. I think made a big difference. I think it made something.
I am also very entertained by the questions that I am sent. You know, what's the latest on the ticketing system? And you know, are we planning on changing the pies in the, you know, in the Graham Taylor stand and all this sort of stuff? I'm like Mike said, just pop them a little letter or an email. Contact the club because they will be able to help with your inquiry. So yeah.
What I would say, and I want to make sure that I get this across quite strongly, is that this isn't under any shape or form belittling supporters, of which I am one, a fanatic, and their request and their desire for information and updates. It comes from a good place. It becomes because that we all care deeply about the football club. Some people are looking further down the track. Some people want to know what the shape of the club is going to look like in 5, 10, 15 years. Other people want to know what the situation is going to be on Saturday. How many away tickets have they sold? And it all comes from the same place, the burning desire to understand and know more about the club. And I get that. There is a balance. There is a nuance to what can be done. And I think perhaps as supporters, if we apply a filter to what we want to be told and really sort of work out whether the reality of whether we will ever get the answer that we want is realistic or not.
Also, just final word on this. The implication of a lot of the criticism is really people, as we've said right from the beginning of this discussion here, the implication is that the people in charge do not have the best interests of the club at heart and do not want it to succeed by the things that they're doing. I just don't believe that that's the case. They might, as we've said, and we've highlighted, and we've discussed, and I've written countless articles about the old guy and the new guy who's in charge and all this sort of stuff. They've made mistakes. They've made a lot of mistakes. They wouldn't have been in the situations that they've been in over the last 12 months if they hadn't have made mistakes. So it is a very interesting one that if you think at the heart of the matter that, you know, Gino Pozzo, Scott Duxbury, Cristiano Giretta, you know, the people that work at the football club, want it to fail in some way, then I would question what you're saying. But I don't think that that's the case. So, you know, I think that yes, people are entitled to their criticisms and answer and wanting answers and things like that. And hopefully, Dave, you're right. There will be a bit more flow. And going back to what we were talking about in the first place, that things like this over time. I'm holding up the program here. Obviously, this is an audio thing. People can't see it. That I'm holding up the program that hopefully things like this may well help over time.
You know that bloody Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, you know, I'm holding the program up here, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I also look like, because it does also look like I'm waving the white flag, which is perhaps also, maybe we'll return to that after these next five games. Right, let's deal with some questions that I can actually answer. Harves has asked regarding the loanees and whether some of those are going to be sort of recalled and drawn back from where they are in the country. As I understand it, I don't think the plan is to make a lot of, you know, breaks in those season-long loans for the likes of, you know, Philip Zinkernagel or Tom Delibashiru, for example. I think that they will try and get through with this smaller, tighter Premier League squad and maybe make a few additions here or there. But we will see. I think it will all depend on, you know, how intense this next couple of months are prior to January and also how the players that are coming back perform, as we were talking about in the defence. Another question from Alfie: would dropping Sarr impact his confidence more than spur him on? Mick Holliday, Emma Lucy also asked about Sarr as well. I think, you know, as Dave was talking about earlier on, you know, he's having a difficult time of it at the moment, but I think, you know, almost it just feels like he will come good again. And, you know, he it's almost like You've got to keep plugging away with him because he is still got that X factor, hasn't he?
I think, and I know Colin and some of the other guys. I think Mike and Colin both were on the same page in the Monday podcast, saying, you know, expressing their concerns about Sarr, and Colin was saying maybe we should give him a few weeks off, which in theory maybe that's a nice idea, but we can't afford to do that. He is still our best player, and I think he is the sort of player that within games has dips of confidence, and I think if that chance in the first half that got cleared off the line goes in, he's then flying and he's up to, you know, he wants the ball and he's gonna be more at it, and I think that's just the way it was. It was one of those days against Southampton. I know he got taken off against Everton, and that's another thing entirely, but I think you have to play him because he still, even in a poor game on Saturday, had a chance to score a goal and nearly took it. So I think you have to play him,
especially when we are going to have to really do without him in January for the Africa Cup of Nations when he goes away with Senegal. Marcus and Robert, we're going to finish off with your two questions. Are there three worst teams in the Premier League at the moment? And that is a tough one because it takes into consideration what's happening at Newcastle. You think, are Burnley going to sort of keep kicking on as they always do? I think it's going to be very, very tight indeed. And it will be interesting to see if we are relying on, you know, obviously Norwich being a worse team.
They are worse than us, no doubt
about
definitely,
it. They're definitely worse. So we've got one in the bag.
I watched their game against Leeds on Sunday and they are just so bad. I really felt sorry for Norwich fans watching that game. They are just absolutely nothing. There is nothing about them whatsoever. They will be relegated unless they change their manager maybe and have some sort of miraculous second half of the season comeback. But anyway, they're tick. Norwich are worse than us. Newcastle currently, I mean, we think back to that game at Vicarage Road, they are actually better than us on the day for the majority of the game. But across the season so far, they might just be worse than us, maybe. But the problem is, we just know, you know, there's that big question mark over them. Who the hell are they going to get as their manager? It looks like Eddie Howe might now be the front runner for the job after Emery turned them down. But it's a bit of a disaster up there still. But they still do have that ability now to potentially overhaul the squad or bring in a game-changing player in January. So we just don't know. Are Burnley worse than us? On some evidence this season, yes. But also, they had a really good win at the weekend. They still do have that togetherness, that steel. Chris Wood is a really good striker on his day. If they get the ball to him in the right areas, he'll score goals. It's touch and go. And after that, that's it. we're definitely not better than any of the other teams in the league. So we're either fourth from bottom or in the bottom three. We're playing for 17th.
But the question is, the current reason for that question is because we're really worried about how Watford are playing. Mm. It doesn't take into consideration any improvement that Watford can make.
Exactly.
So it is quite a pessimistic view. It's like,
definitely. Our job is to make ourselves better than some teams by winning those games and, you know, exactly, winning those head-to-heads and, I think, you know, there are people into it.
There are some teams that will have bad spells. And, you know, Brentford, it's their first time in the Premier League. It's going to be tough for them to maintain it. They're only 2 points above Watford at the moment. Aston Villa aren't having a great time of it at the moment. Obviously, they've got quality in their side. And it basically comes down to goals. Effectively, I think, if you can score in, I know it sounds basic, but if you've got someone that can consistently score goals, then you will be able to do okay. And yeah, fingers crossed, Watford can do that. Final one, what is going to be success over the next 10 games? Robert Needham asks. I think probably let's deal with the next five, because it might be that we're going to be...
1 point?
We're going to be... Yeah, I'd say next five, if Watford can get a point, then... I think you've got to be.
So let's
be
bold.
Be relatively happy.
3 points from those five games. We've got to, let's back ourselves to get a win somewhere, somehow. That would definitely be success.
3 points. 3 points would be a success. That's the question, isn't it? Would it be a success?
Yeah.
Yes. A point would be probably what you're thinking is going to happen. 3 points would be a success. But let me just leave you with this. In terms of the 10 points that we have collected so far this season, the average position of the teams that we have faced so far this season is 12th, okay? And we've collected 10 points. Over the next five games, we're obviously facing teams in 1st, 3rd, 5th, 6th and 11th currently. So the average position in terms of those five teams is 5th. So... Yeah, probably. Probably. But let's end it on a positive and fingers crossed that we can exceed expectations, as we said a little bit earlier on. Now, if you want to prepare yourself for the big challenge against Arsenal and you want to join the proposition of The Athletic and read about not only Watford, but Arsenal and all the other teams and American sports and all that sort of stuff, do get on board by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you will be able to get a 33% discount on a new subscription. Mike, thank you very much, as always, for your company.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, Ed. There's loads of us going to Arsenal, so if you do see any of us, do come and say hello. It's always nice to put faces to names and that sort of stuff. Come on, you Boldens.
Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
And we will be back reacting on Monday. It's going to be a quick turnaround after that Sunday game on the next edition of From the Rookery End.
The Athletic.